This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com.
So I got a banter item, which is that Twitter yesterday, Tina Fetner and Daniel Larson, a few other people, were talking about, apologies to anybody I forgot, we're talking about that, you know, it kind of sucks that the ASA submission process comes at the first second week of January. I'm old enough to remember, you guys are, well, we all went to grad school together, we're all the same age. We're all old enough to remember when there was the kind of annual crashing of the server, which in effect was a deadline extension. But, you know, I guess now they discovered Amazon Cloud Computing. You know, but, you know, it used to always be like, you know, it's due January 7th and the server would crash every January 7th.
Yeah. And nobody would learn their lesson the next year.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Well, you didn't have to, right? Because you knew that there would be an extension.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, you have this 9-month lead time, because it's always the second or third week of August, before ASA, and it's like that's a really long time, especially given that you have the whole. Paper.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes people have said like, well, maybe we should have it be that it's like a 4-month lead time and you submit the whole paper. Then the thing that gets back to you is like, well, it takes, you know, a month and a half to put the schedule together once you have the papers. And it takes, you know, 2 months to put together a panel because that's a lot of peer review. And I've done it multiple times. It actually is a tremendous peer review effort to go through, you know, 100 paper submissions and put together a couple of panels.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of work. And if somebody told me I had a week to do it, I'd say, no way, you know. But so the real answer to speed it up is to make it less work. And the way to make it less work for both the submitters and the peer reviewers is to make it as just an extended abstract rather than a full paper or at least half a paper, because 20 pages is short by sociology standards. And a lot of disciplines do this, and it generally works for them, right? An extended abstract, right, which is to say basically – about 500 words is a very common way to do conference submissions.
Well,
computational social science, and I submitted an extended abstract. And then the other thing, which I'd like to talk about a little later, is that I got in as a poster, and I went to the conference because it was a poster. At ASA, that would have been a roundtable, and I wouldn't have gone.
Right.
But let's talk about the extended abstracts first.
Right.
Okay, so here's the thing. So I have gone through that review process myself for both SSSP and for ASA. And you're right, you know, it's a lot of work. But at the same time, I always thought that part of this was just this weeding out process where they were like, you know what, if we allow extended abstracts, instead of getting 115 submissions, we're going to get 2,000 submissions. I mean, I'm totally exaggerating.
Really? I feel like to a first approximation, you submit a paper. Like, I'm not going to submit two papers. I'm going to submit one paper to ASA most years. And if it's extended abstracts, I'm not going to submit five extended abstracts. I'm still going to submit one. Extended abstract.
I know, but how many people will have a completed paper? That's what I'm saying. I know you're not going to submit multiples. What I'm saying is more people will be able to submit an extended abstract by that deadline than would be able to submit a completed paper.
So maybe I would submit a paper or an abstract every year instead of submitting a paper every other year.
Well, the conference itself would be more like the ESS, I guess, right? It would change the tenor of the presentations. And also, like, let's be honest, you could have that deadline in April and everybody would just wait till mid-March, right? And they'd be like, oh, why is it April? I just need it till May. Like, we've all been on the other side of deadlines, like waiting for them and setting them. And almost invariably, the people who you set it for feel like they could use just an extra 2 weeks, regardless of where you set it.
I mean, so my sense is that, you know, in some ways what happens is So I did a panel last year, a housing panel, and two of the five papers that I ultimately accepted onto the panel came out in published form around the same time as the ASA. So, you know, what that meant was that
so they were able to incorporate a lot of feedback in typesetting phase.
Right. Right. Just in the typesetting phase. Mm. But I mean, it sort of raised this question for me about sort of what the purpose of presenting at the ASA is, right? So is it to do some sort of paper that's in progress and get that feedback? Mm. And if that's the case, then sort of like late stage final papers, right, should not be submitted. Mm. But is it just to sort of alert the sociological community to the work that you're doing by sort of having you stand up there and present something that's almost done? I mean, I go to APAM every year to the public policy conference, mm-hmm. and I mean they have a sort of a different problem. It's extended abstracts, and they put panels together. Groups of people submit panels, right, which is a classic in lots of other disciplines too, where you can get three or four or five of your colleagues, friends, mm-hmm. people in your social network and submit an actual panel. Mm-hmm. In some ways it works a lot better because you get these sort of very coherent panels. I find that at ASA quite often you have papers that sort of don't seem to fit together, and they're sort of, broadly stuck under the category of welfare state or broadly stuck under poverty, but they don't have a lot of relationship to each mm-hmm. other. Whereas APAM, you get panels that actually can deal really nicely with each other. I mean, the flip side of that is you get this sort of reproduction of the same scholars every year that a couple people are finding their friends. And then, I've been on a housing panel for the last 4 years with some combination of the same 10 people. So it doesn't always create an opportunity to be involved in it unless you're sort of already in the club. But I think it's an alternative that solves a bunch of problems of the ASA.
You know what? It's like to follow up on that, this idea about panels and getting feedback, what is up? Like, what is up with sessions where there's supposedly a discussant, but like no one gives you feedback on the panel, gives you any feedback on your work, and they just open it up for the audience? That's one of my biggest pet peeves. If you are a discussant, what is your job?
I hate discussants.
Well, they know, Leslie, that the paper is already about to be published. So,
yeah.
They're just.
Well, also, I mean, the problem with being a discussant is you have these papers that were just the five best papers on race or the five best papers on housing or the five best papers on personal finance or whatever, but they have nothing to do with each other other than the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the genre conventions of being a discussant is you have to draw out a common theme, mm-hmm. and it's incredibly contrived. It's inevitably the most boring part of the talk. So right. I would add that to my list of, once I'm made dictator for life of ASA, no discussants.
Well, Gabriel, I have to totally disagree with you on that.
Okay.
Because I have been to sessions where there have been masterful discussants who have been able to draw, like things in commonalities with the papers, while also giving meaningful feedback and weaving it all together. Mm-hmm. It's a skill, right? And I actually think that a lot of people who sign up to be discussants are just really crappy at it.
Well, also, you don't always sign up. Like every time the ASA rolls through New York, you're like, will you please be discussant on these four panels? Because a keyword on one of your papers matches one of the papers on the panel. So it's like, it's not everybody who is a discussant was clamoring for it. You know what I mean? Although you should say no if you're not clamoring for it.
Yeah.
Let's be sure. But also, like, what's the function of it? I mean, what's the function of these ASA meetings? Is it a public showcase of research that's already been done? Because if that's the case, it's a very, very inefficient way of communicating new research. Like, the internet's here. We don't all have to gather and deliver it orally. It could be interviewed.
The roundtables are the extreme of this. Nobody sees the roundtable. The only purpose of the roundtable is so that you can tell your university's comptroller, whatever they're called, that you appeared on the conference program so you can pay for a vacation where you get to visit your friends from grad school out of your research budget.
I don't know. I think we're being. Come on.
Yeah.
Be a little more positive about this.
I mean, my
you do realize to whom you're speaking, right?
Yes.
My best experience at the ASA actually in a decade of going was on a round table. And I will say, I had that one experience and then I've never done a round table since. But I remember it was in San Francisco, like 2009. And I sat down and there were two other people at that table. They happened to be Sarah Cowan and Dave Brady. And we had the best conversation for an hour, right, that I've ever had at ASA about sort of academic work. So, you know, that's, I'm sure, the exception more so than the rule. But it was a sort of really enlightening experience as a fourth year grad student to have that. So, you know, it doesn't happen often, but every now and then the roundtable comes through.
It's good for junior scholars, I think. You know, first of all, we already did a section on roundtables versus posters, because I've been.
Oh, okay. So we don't need to go back to that yet.
We don't need to go too back. Like, I think we pretty much fleshed out our views, but like, yeah, I think they're good. The hit rate's lower. Most of them aren't good, but they still. I mean, look, the hit rate's not that high on panel presentations. The hit rate's not that high on main stage plenary sessions. Quite candidly, right?
Yeah.
Like. You attend 20 presentations and you get like 3 or 4.
Oh, plenary sessions suck. Generally. I mean, it's almost part of the nature of them.
They need headliners, I guess.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.